Hey, everybody, and welcome to the Games with Garfield podcast. My name is Tyler Bielman. I am alongside Mr. Scaffolias.
Hello.
And the Honorable Richard Garfield.
Still here.
And today we wanted to combine the doomed news segment with the actual body of the show. And we're going to talk about the changes to the Magic rules system that are hot right now. Everybody's talking about it. That comes out with a new Magic 2010 set, and get your guys' takes as original creators of Magic. And first of all, what do you think of the idea of calling it Magic 2010 or M10 for short? Kind of following in the footsteps of Madden 2010 and those kind of games.
It sounds fine. I think you do need a name for a new rule system. When we're coming over, what did I say? Magic 5th Edition?
Richard was all excited because he was about to talk about Magic 5th Edition rules.
6th Edition is actually the last big change, I think. And so I wasn't even 6 years old. I was older than that.
We're actually just running these right off of the daily MTG Magic the Gathering page, which we'll put a link to in the show notes so you can follow along if you'd like. And on their page, rule number one, the change has to do with simultaneous mulligans instead of doing them sequentially. You guys have any thoughts about that?
No.
It's a problem. I mean, it's a minor change. It should be done. Mulligans weren't even part of the rules at the beginning. Certainly, it's worth pointing out that I don't mind people changing the rules to my game. I think games change over time, and each set of rules they've made several steps forward and maybe one step back, and probably overall, I think that's what they've done this time.
Yeah, the simultaneous mulligans thing, that was even in the old days, that would have been more of a tournament rule than a rule book rule. It's probably the right thing to do. It's not so exciting a change.
All right. So what might be an exciting change, at least for me, because I'm sort of a flavor guy, is they've changed the terminology of some of the areas of zones in the game, as well as some of the terminology, clarifying some things between casting and putting in play and things like that. So what do you think of the term battlefield for the in-play zone, and I guess the other one is exile for the remove from game zone?
Well, I hate the term exile because the remove from play area used to definitely be an area, but it was secret. Because we don't really call it an area. And now the secret's, it's the cat's out of the bag. You know, there's no mystery left in the game now that you've actually named all the actual zones.
Yeah, in the early days, it was things like Swords to Plowshare, which removes the creature from the game. It's out of the game. It's removed from play. It was envisioned as not being a part of the game anymore. But of course, over the years, it's become more and more of a zone, and so now they've named it. That's probably a good thing. I was actually really surprised when I began reading the content of that, when I saw them talk about how they call the graveyard, they call the discard pile the graveyard, and they call the deck the library, which of course is what I began out calling it. I thought that they were going to be changing those names to the more generic names, deck and library, because that's more new player friendly. But they actually went, then when I read it, they actually gone further, and they'd taken all the things which were still dry and made them flavorful. So I guess that's fine.
Cool. The next rule down on the list is the there's a clarification having to do with the end step, and what's the beginning of the end step and the end of the end step.
I've got no opinion there. I do know that in general their stated goal of making it more operate more intuitively, I support that goal. And where there's And if you play with a beginner and they play casually with their friends, and then you play with an expert player and they play differently because they understand how it really technically works, if you can minimize that difference, that's good. I assume that's what's going on here.
This whole beginning of the end of the beginning thing is something that don't bet your life that it won't change again in the future. I'm sure whatever they've done is better than what it was before, and probably will have to change again. It's just a confusing thing that hopefully got a little bit better.
All right. The next one on the list is one that I certainly had a very reflexive negative reaction to, but I've managed to calm down a little bit. I don't know if the message boards have or not yet, but it has to do with mana pools and when they empty and effectively eliminating mana burn as a penalty for players for mishandling their resources.
Yeah, pool or a pond. Pond's good for you.
Yeah. So what do you guys think? I mean, this is a pretty, you know, a highly identifiable, iconic part of the game, this mana burn thing.
If you've been around long enough, which is to say before Magic came out, you know, it's kind of a whatever. Mana burn really wasn't even in there in the beginning for the first couple years we played the game. And it kind of crept in because we didn't want people to just go. We needed a mana pool to make some sense out of casting exactly how a card was casted to try and formalize that. And then some people who were just trying to be jerks, maybe I was one of them, just
maybe
would just then dump all their mana into the mana pool so that you know, it couldn't be disrupted because certain things disrupted it back at the time. And anyway, to sort of prevent that and prevent people from ever wanting to do that, mana burn was introduced into the game, the clearing the mana out of the pools. And maybe that wasn't good enough, so maybe actually take some damage from it. And then from there, it took on a life of its own, and it actually became part of the play of the game.
Yeah, certainly. Back in the old days, there was a point where you could technically, at the start of your turn, just tap all your land, and then you'd have all your mana for the whole turn. And the only difference would be that your opponent couldn't tell how much it was, and it was a pain to keep track of, and so forth. And so, mana burn eventually was an answer to that. But clearing your mana pool at the when you go to a different step or after you cast your spells or something like that is adequate, is just fine. So we didn't need that. And from time to time, I mean, there's been some interesting spells which have used mana burn. Occasionally there'd be something like you tap the lands and you get the double mana. And that was in there in the beginning, but then there were some spells which really exacerbated the risk of mana burn, and that was pretty cool, but it wasn't at all worth the confusion that mana burn had.
In fact, mana burn was slated to be destroyed in 6th edition. It was one of the proposed, let's get rid of this, there's no reason for it, and it didn't make the list. There were a lot of other changes already happening back when the 6th edition rules changed.
Anyway, I can tell you as the original designer, I don't mind seeing it go. I think it's. I always felt like it was a pretty rough edge of the game.
Well, you heard it here, people. It's okay that mana burn is gone. the next point on the list has to do with the ownership of tokens. This seems like it's kind of a clarification. It looks like there was some confusion having to do with tokens changing ownership. Any thoughts on that, or you guys just...
Yeah, there was something weird about... Yeah, I don't have any opinion. It was something weird that if I took control of your token, that something weird would happen if it left play or changed sides or the... I don't know. It's not interesting. But I did read it. I read through it. I forget what it said, but it made sense.
2 points, baby. 2 points. And now we come to the big one, which is the modification in the stack, as specifically combat damage no longer using the stack. There being kind of a new sequence to combat that has different ramifications on how toughness gets changed and when damage is applied. And this is pretty technical, and I don't want to go into explaining it here in the podcast, but I do want to get your guys' reaction to it. Now, since you've read it and had a chance to process,
this is the big one. This is big, and it's taken a while to get my brain around what the problem was, and what they were how they thought this would fix it, and
what
did
they come up with an intelligent way of fixing.
This isn't great. What was there before had problems, and I'm sure that whatever I'd come up with have problems too. But this is
can we take this all the way to the beginning and go back to how was combat damage dealt with in the beginning?
Well, things weren't really dealt with properly in the beginning to begin with. I mean, there were multiple different timing systems. At one point, everything used the stack, like, you know, the first day of playing Magic, maybe, and then rapidly the you know, corner cases kept popping up, and then by the time Magic was launched, there were multiple different timing systems. With interrupts and
right, and people that might not know, instance, interrupts were a whole card type that were faster than instants, essentially.
Yeah, and then mana, speed of mana, and all this kind of garbage. And 6th edition cleaned that up, and there was one of the great things about it was that it attempted to. I think there were still some failures, but mostly put everything on the stack.
So
last in, first out.
Regulate system. It so everything kind of used the same system.
Right.
And how involved were you getting both?
I can actually give a real illustration of how this sort of thing works, I think. We can probably come up with a better one after I say this, because maybe it won't work. But the reason why there weren't problems at the beginning is because the cards were written and you play them and they kind of make sense. It's just when you get into massive conflagrations of different effects that it starts becoming difficult to navigate. But, for example... in the beginning, we played with a stack, but you've got an effect like heal, prevent 3 points of damage. Now, if you lightning bolt my guy and I play that in reaction to it, then if it's on a stack, I'm healing it before it's been done. That doesn't make any sense. But if I wait until after it's resolved, it's dead. Right. And so so that's sort of the origin of why we need something faster than something else. It doesn't work on the stack and it doesn't work after the fact. And so but on the other hand, if you play it intuitively, this says prevent 3 points of damage and you've done 3 points of damage. Anybody knows what that's supposed to do.
Right. And I think there was some clarification in 6th editions you would put up damage shields.
Right. And so you can either have two different speeds or you can do something like they did in the 6th edition, where you put up like a shield, and so they got regeneration shields and so forth, and so anyway, this is the sort of place that these problems of intuition versus the rules comes from.
And how involved were each of you in the 6th edition rules changes?
6th edition was what was primarily me bitching so much about the different multiple casting systems that I made a series of proposals to the people that were running things back then. And after a long, long, long battle, they were finally accepted. I think Joel Mick was the guy in charge at the time. And a team was formed and went through to do some of the exact implementations.
Yeah, I wasn't much involved myself.
I would say I was the primary person of getting it started.
I remember with 6th edition, and the reason we come to 6th edition is because there's been rules changes other than 6th edition and 2010. Is that what they're calling it?
2010 or M10.
2010. But 6th edition was by far the biggest change since then. And when it came out, I really thought it was almost all for the better.
Yeah,
and really, it was 6th edition. Really was more than anything else a return to the simplest of the old systems from before the game was released. And what happened is rules kept getting added. We would create cards. We would like the way they played. We'd realize that they weren't quite fitting into a rule system, and then new rules would.
Do you remember Tom Wiley's timing chart?
Yeah,
It was drawn up like a dungeon, wasn't it?
It was.
It was just this vast labyrinth. You could have put this in a maze book and said find your way to the end, and it wouldn't have been it would be more difficult than most. Yeah,
that was in the Duelist, right?
I think it was.
I think I remember seeing that.
Yeah,
and it was hanging up in R&D for a long time too.
If it was put on placemats at Denny's, kids would be crying.
So let's get in. So now we've sort of covered the origins, and we've covered the 6th edition rules. So now with this adjustment, I got a sense of what you thought you're thinking broadly, but dive into it a little bit for me. Tell me what you guys are thinking.
I'll talk a little about what they're trying to answer here. What the problem is that a lot of people didn't intuit what should happen when creatures were in combat and they started using special abilities. Because there's this timing difficulty between, they're blocking, so now can they use their special ability because they're blocking? And, tapped creatures can't use their can't block, and tapped creatures can't attack. So creatures in combat, it is sort of there's a lot of cases where it feels counterintuitive they can be using special abilities, and then it gets even more dicey when they start dealing damage, and then after they've dealt damage they start putting special abilities on the stack, and it becomes counterintuitive, and a lot of the high skill play was looked to beginners like rules lawyering.
Well, because it was rules lawyering, but the sorts of things like really early on when Tim was able to kill an attacking grizzly bear, that sort of thing, or all the tricks with Mog Fanatic and whatever, those were things that people just never really enjoyed, never really liked, and so I think they were addressing an important problem for the beginners.
Yeah, some people do like having tricks that they know, and some
well,
people
well they'll always be tricks.
there's plenty of tricks. Okay. In fact, it's not even clear that they reduced them right. To me, just looking at it.
The place where you want tricks, I think, is where you've got a card in your hand, and for instance, there's cards which can target your friend or your enemy, and sometimes you want to do your enemy, and sometimes you want to do your friend, and the advanced player will use it in an unexpected way, or after the other person's wasted some resources in the wrong time. Those are the sort of tricks which I think that beginners play, and they don't think, oh wow, this person pulled some weird rules thing on me. They'll just look at it and say, oh, they just used their cards in a really clever way. That's the sort of trick that I want to see, where beginners say, I could have seen that, but I didn't. Rather than a lot of these timing things with combat, it's like my son, I play with him, and he's like, he comes down with his friends and says, Daddy, can I block like this and then do this? And sometimes I'll say yes, and sometimes I'll say no, and it's like they can't figure it out, right? And so when my son uses some weird trick on his friends, they don't feel like they could have figured that out.
Right. So does this new system help that problem that you've identified?
It certainly helps a little. I mean, there's no question about that. For someone who doesn't read the rules and who's never going to read the rules and would never think to do that, some of those tricks, now they can't do those tricks. So the rule book matches the way they play. Now, did it help in the sense that someone who really reads it understands all the implications of it? I'm not sure about that. And what new tricks will be generated from it is hard to say. The thing I don't like about it is that it's another type of timing system.
So, yeah, it's working differently than...
In some ways, it's moving back to the thing where my example with the healing salve, where the healing salve, in order to make it so... I didn't think at the beginning this can be a prevention screen, so we said, okay, well, it's got to be faster. So it's a similar sort of thing where it's moving to a different timing system...
There's a general attitude for a game that's going to last through 10 editions or 16 years or whatever, which is that, and this is a lot of what motivated 6th edition, is that the rules, give yourself a clean rule system, as clean as you can, because you're going to be heaping a lot of stuff on it later down the line, and if that means that the cards don't work the way you think they should at one particular moment in time, doesn't matter. Have the cards bend around the rules because, 10 years from now, keeping the rule system as simple as possible is going to be, in the long run, the best thing to do. So that's why I don't like sort of the general flavor of the decision.
And let's break it down as easily as we can. The new system has to do with the attacker assigning a priority order to the blocking targets. And really the only difference, as I understand it, is when there's multiple blockers. That really a one-on-one scenario, it's basically the same timing for using instants and things like that, mm-hmm. or effects. But in the instance of multiple blockers, the attacker is assigning a priority order to the blockers, and those blockers have to soak lethal damage. They're required to soak lethal damage before it goes to the next creature in the line. And
right,
so there's a lot of similarities to Trample for people who may sort of be familiar with Magic.
Right. And so one of the confusing
things
is that...
Well, people who aren't familiar with Magic
in this some, may not
haven't
be the
gotten
podcast
much for that.
For you.
Yeah, in some ways the damage reassigns itself depending upon what happens as far as creatures' toughnesses go and stuff, which is a little odd.
Clarify that?
I believe that I don't actually assign damage. I assign an order.
An order, right? Exactly. So. Yeah. Okay. So generally speaking, you made it when we first started talking about this. You said that this might not have been the most intelligent answer.
I worry about it in the sense that what feels weird to the kids is that your guy is able to do two things.
Deal his damage and
do something else, yeah, and activate his ability. And that's sort of the core of the problem for a newbie. And in a way, somehow the simplest approach would have been to say activated abilities don't work on creatures once they've been my first take on it was once they've been assigned to combat. And Richard brought up some points about why that may not be the best thing in the world, and he had an improvement to it.
So yeah, I was talking about not being able to use your special abilities once damage has been assigned, or
yeah, right. Yeah. Once it's been
so something. I mean, and Scaff then pointed out that if we were designing a game today, we probably wouldn't think twice about his original proposal. The only reason I would make it so that it's after damage has been assigned. Assigned is because I think it's relatively understandable and closer to Magic.
Yeah,
it's a lot more these days games are designed with a lot more
thought
control
and intelligence
over the combat step. So there's a lot of games that come out and they'll say the attacker can play exactly one card to augment combat, and the defender can play exactly one card after that, and it's much, much more controlled. And those games, you know, it's like even though there's a lot less flexibility than Magic, those games do have a lot of strategy still. They just, it's just different.
First of all, to be clear, we're not at Wizards of the Coast. We've talked to some people from there about why they made the changes. They've got a huge team of people working on this sort of thing. Once they would hear the proposal that we would make, I am sure that they would tear it apart, you know, in 10 different ways, because we just haven't. We're not paid to sit around and think about
it. But this is our podcast. We can say whatever we
that's
want.
True.
And those guys, they can come on the show if they want to talk
about
it.
That's right. That's true. We'd love to have a guest from Wizards come on and
or
talk.
Or formerly from Wizards. Because there's more,
as
more
so
of those
many are.
Around.
Yeah, and we've been assured that some of the things which we would have thought were fairly intuitive caused the beginners a lot more problem than we would have anticipated.
But I think that has a virtue. The thing we just proposed has whether you say after its assignment of to combat or of damage. Either way, if you tell a kid, oh, hey, you know, once you're in combat, you can't do anything else, or once you assign your damage, you can't do anything else. That, you know, you're shut off until combat's over. I mean, nobody's going to bat an eye at that. That just sort of takes the problem on head on. It's very easy to explain that rule. You don't have to come up with a different timing system. Damage isn't reassigning itself. And I don't know. Maybe it works. Maybe it doesn't.
All right. Yeah, in conclusion, I do agree that there's some problems there that they really are trying to they're trying to address a real problem. I am not convinced they've gotten the best thing there, and I expect there's a good chance there'll be changes in the future.
But I hear M20.
M20.
Oh, it's going to be fantastic.
2020.
So the last two on the list are something called Death Touch and Life Link, which are specific keyword abilities. I don't know anything about them. You guys have anything to say about them?
I know lifelink means when I do damage, I gain life. I don't. What is the other death?
Death touch, I think, is if
no, this, if you if, touch that's like the basilisk ability, the
I think
cockatrice
that's right.
ability.
Yeah,
I'm sure that is. Do they really need that much text to explain?
It does seem like there's a lot
that's
to explain.
Crazy,
it. But
they seem like pretty simple abilities.
I'm what sure. are the results of damage? The list updated through Magic 2.10, and then there's six different ways that damage is dealt. Has results, so.
Well, it's because of the system, the way it works now. I think they're all dealing somehow with the new system.
Damage, yeah.
And just to be clear for those listening, I mean the proposal that we had of creature ability shutting off was not triggered ability shutting off, but just
activated
ability shutting off.
Do you any stories about? Like the basilisk or the cockatrice ability, since we're on that subject, any old?
Well, there is the observation that they've. I mean, you asked me. You said they've got a change with lifelink and death touch, and I constantly run into these things in Magic which have now been given names, and I don't know the names.
Vigilance? Are you familiar with vigilance?
I know what a lot of them mean, but my, but again,
is
my son
just angel.
Yeah, yeah, it's the Sarah
doesn't tap when attacks. Yeah, but my son has come up to he was playing with an angel, and at one point he was playing, he tapped, and I said, no, you don't have to tap. It's got vigilance. He goes, oh, that's what that means.
There you go.
And he didn't know. And actually, I'm a big fan of those words, although typically I like to see the ability written after. So I like to say vigilance, colon, doesn't attack when it taps. Because vigilance, then you can talk about that ability, and it's much more flavorful. You got some sort of idea of what's going on.
Yeah.
My main thing is I despise when it's not written afterward.
And I think when at least some period of time when we were there, the rule was we would write it out unless it was on a rare. And then we would, we couldn't write it out because there were more abilities.
You worked at Wizards?
I did, actually. Strangely enough, yeah, yeah. Who knows? Someday we're gonna have to do a podcast, and we'll figure out who Scaff Elias and Tyler Bielman are. which actually reminds me, we're done. So we're done with the rules. Before we get into the next topic, we need to give a shout out to MTG Cast, who mentioned us on their podcast, which was very nice of them, as well as Randy Bueller's blog. He had a nice mention of us, as well as some other places. So things are on the move for us.
Oh, yeah. Here at Games, big time.
Games with Garfield.
We'll put some links in at the end.
Yeah, absolutely. The show notes will have some shout-outs back. But
MTG Cast is a Magic the Gathering podcast.
Yeah, seems like cool guys doing their thing on the Monday Night Magic podcast, and there's some other ones too, and I believe one of the podcasts is called Damage on the Stack, so they may have to rename that podcast. Ooh. Ouch. Okay, so I also, there was another sort of interesting thing that happened with Magic recently, which is Duels of the Planeswalkers went up on Xbox Live Arcade, and this is a remake of a PC game that came out a long time ago?
Not really.
Oh,
no.
Really?
No,
okay.
Not really.
Right. So it's not in any way like the PC game that was called Duels of Planeswalkers.
Well, it's a Magic game on a computer. Wait,
which was that game?
Wasn't it the...
wasn't the Acclaim game, was it?
No, and maybe. I don't know.
The Acclaim game whose biggest merit was that it would crash a lot so you didn't have to play it?
Yeah, I be careful now because contracts were signed saying we wouldn't say stuff like that. But...
that wasn't actually Richard Garfield. That was, what was the
name? They can't prove it was Richard Garfield.
Right. You had
they can't prove.
So are you talking about Chandelier?
Yes. No.
Chandelier's different.
No, Chandelier's different.
So what is the same? Did I miss it? Oh, are you talking about that one that was like an arcade game?
Battleground was Battleground. The arcade game. Yeah. No, this is not. I knew this wasn't.
That game was cool, by the way.
Trackball, right? With the trackball.
Yeah, that was Armageddon.
Oh, that was right? Armageddon. Battleground
and
was
the
different.
One was the X. There was one on the Xbox. Well, yeah. No, there was one on the PC, which was kind of similar but a little less cool.
Was there walking?
Well, there was a little walking.
A little bit of walking. That was a callback to the last podcast. So you got? Have you played it?
I have played it.
And Richard, you played it?
I did. They had an opening event. So I think it released on a Thursday, and they
it's supposed
asked,
to be on Wednesday with other.
Okay, I guess it was
games,
a Wednesday then, and then on Saturday they had a lot of Magic celebs play against people, and so they had me there playing, and it was the first time I'd played.
When you say there. I mean, it's a
in the
cyberspace.
Cyberspace, yes.
Oh, you were in.
I was on the internet or on the Xbox internet, Xbox Live Arcade, I guess.
And what was your experience? Did you have a good time? Was it interesting? What do you think?
Yeah, I had a fun time. I've wanted to go into it. I've got mixed feelings about it. I wanted to go in it liking it because Magic's my baby and I love the game. But then again, I proposed a similar game to Wizards a couple years ago, and so was kind of irritated that they didn't go with my proposal. And so I didn't want to like it for that reason. But they got a lot of the merit, a lot of good things going there. I will say that the interface, which is the stumbling block of a lot of computer games, and one would imagine would be a huge stumbling block for a game as complex as Magic, was indeed a stumbling block.
Yeah, I'm not. I wasn't smart enough to handle the interface. I quit playing my first session because I could not figure out how to look at my opponent's cards.
Yeah.
Now, for all of those listening, they're like, "Man, that dude's an idiot. He shouldn't have a license to drive, much less play computer games." It's the right thumbstick, which lets you do that. I know that now, but I could not figure it out at the time.
Yeah, and
since since the left thumbstick is really good at showing you all the cards except your opponents.
Yeah, I don't understand that. That was one of the many interface decisions I don't understand. I will credit them. It is a tough problem, and there are probably things I didn't anticipate, but I had exactly the same problem. I could not. I had a handler. He was standing over me making sure my experience was as pleasant as possible. And it's like, how the hell do I see what the opponents have? And he's a right thumbstick, and it just never would have occurred to me because the left thumbstick seems so good at moving around and checking things out.
And this game, I've heard... I haven't played, but I've heard some complaints about that you don't have a lot of control over your deck, and that you can't, for example, see how many lands you have in your deck. You can't take land out. It's sort of that the computer's handling certain aspects of the deck building, and you acquire cards.
I mean, those choices are understandable. I mean, one thing is it is a little bit annoying that the computer actually is putting extra land into your deck, but I think the number of your deck size doesn't increment properly to reflect exactly how many extra land are going in, but that's a minor thing. I think that the choice they made to limit the player's choices are not unreasonable. Maybe in an expansion they'll open that up or something.
And similar to the ones we proposed for in the first place, so we would have. I wanted to make it a low. Not nearly as customizable as Magic for a lot of reasons. One is because they've got Magic Online and they don't want to rob that entirely. And the other reason is just because if you're it's a lot of fun playing in a game in a game where you don't have to fine tune your deck too much. Like it's not that complicated to fine tune your deck. And so what they've got, just in case you haven't played what is it called?
Duels of the Planeswalker.
Duels of the Planeswalker. Just in case you haven't played it,
I believe it's called Magic Duels of the Planeswalker, right?
Sorry, there is maybe Magic
the Gathering. Magic Colon the Gathering.
Colon, of course.
Duels of the Planeswalkers.
I think what it should be called is Richard Garfield's Magic Colon. Now, that's what it should be
Richard Garfield's Magic Colon? I'm not going to pay $10 for that game.
Well, it's a very good colon. And so... in the game, when you're playing, you unlock a bunch of different decks, say 8 or 10 different decks, and then as you play more, you unlock more cards, and you can put those cards into your deck, but you can't swap cards out as players might expect, and you can't mix and match cards between decks or anything like that. So really, if you've got your fire deck, and you've unlocked 17 cards. You've got you can put in all 17. You can put in none of them. You can put in 3 of them, and those are your only choices. Which of those 17 cards you're going to add to your deck? And it adds lands in some magical way, in which
I think it's
I don't,
2 to 3.
Their feedback on that is very unclear exactly what's going on. So it had me confused.
Put in cards that make your mana base more efficient without using land. Is the system smart enough to decrease your land because you're putting in?
I don't think so. Did you?
Wait. No.
If I put an elf in the deck.
Same as if you put a Mahmoodi Djinn in.
No. And so there's going to be some talent to deck making, but the in that, for instance, then if you're adding elves to your deck, which are making your deck more efficient, you might be able to put in more expensive spells, which otherwise the thing isn't compensating enough, or something like that. But the variety in the play is very large because you've got 60 cards you begin with, and now once you've added 10 cards, you've added actually 15 cards, or is it? In any case,
I don't know.
So in any case, if you've unlocked one Wrath of God.
Number.
It's in a 75 frickin' card deck. You're not going to see it all that often.
You've added 6. So I don't know exactly what the next step is.
And so you've So every time you add these special cards, they're not coming up very much. And players of Magic sort of design their deck around consistency. They're not seeing consistency. They're seeing variety, which is a good thing for beginners and for casual players. And the others can either play a lot to have their expertise show through, or they can move on to Magic proper.
Yeah, I'm not. I've only played it a little bit. I'm not actually allowed to play it in my house, because this game and also one other one. Maybe it's the Age of Booty. My 3-year-old son will not let me play because it's lame and boring.
No, that's nice.
There's no machine guns. At least I have not been able to unlock the machine guns or the nuclear bombs.
No, that's the DLC, right? You're gonna get the tanks and the nukes and the.
My son, on the other hand, a few years older, loves it. He's been playing, and in fact, they were thoughtful enough to put a cooperative campaign in it, which is great. So we sit down and we play Two-Headed Giant every once in a while, and he brings out the cards he's unlocked.
Would your son like it more if there were machine guns in it?
Yeah, probably.
So they should have just put machine guns in it, and then everybody could play.
That's true. Yeah, that's true. That was short-sighted of them, I think. I will say that there is one thing that which really irritates me about the game, which is that I have to play single player in order to unlock cards.
Oh, I hate that in games when you advance in a campaign.
Awful. It is just terrible because I finished the campaign and now I want to play people online but I kind of want to have my cards unlocked, so I have to go back and grind on the campaign to unlock. And actually, I'm not going to do that. I've called up Worth and said, send me a cheat code, and he's going to send me the cheat code, and I'm going to unlock all the cards while you suckers have to grind through the campaign.
I'm going to bleep out his name.
My problem is that I'm wearing out my X button on my controller. I start playing the game, and it took me a long time to figure out, exactly when I should hit X, and I felt bad hitting it so much.
The answer is all the time, right?
Exactly. Just constantly. Just mash it constantly. And so what I really would like is, and I'm an idiot, so there probably is just this option in the control panel. I would really like it to pop up and say, okay, are you ready to proceed? And I understand why they didn't make that choice. That's how Magic Online works. And it's really daunting to a beginner because you're constantly saying, okay, can I go ahead? Can [S2] Right. [S1] I go ahead? Can I go ahead? But the alternative is, given how Magic timing works, the alternative is you've just got to constantly mash the damn X button. Yeah. To make sure it stops all the time, and I don't know what happens if you're not a Magic player and you're playing it. My suspicion is you just don't interrupt your opponent as much as you should.
Yeah,
it was really surprising to me. I would not have expected that beginners could figure out how to play Magic from this, but we've been told that the test groups react really positively to it. That they do figure it out and have a fun time.
It's a hell of a game. And
By the way, it's a huge hit. It's a massive seller. Great number of downloads. Incredible conversion rate.
So it's approaching Schizoid levels, would you say? It's a couple more weeks, and it's possible. It might get to like half Schizoid numbers.
Could possibly.
It's such a luxury, actually, to play an Xbox game like this, where I can hit. Play multiplayer and find people waiting for a game. It's so good. It kind of sucks that I've got to grind to get cards to play them, but it's still, it's really good.
Yeah. See how in 6 months, I wonder if it's going to be another empty lobby.
Right, but, yeah, right, exactly. That's the real problem.
Well, hopefully I'll have all my achievements
for the
by
first,
then.
For the first week, you could do that for Schizoid. And then after the first week, you really couldn't.
Yeah. Could he really do it for the first week?
Yeah. Well, every time I logged on in the evening, I was able to find players.
Schizoid had that huge. It had such a huge problem though that when you match with somebody, you are attached to them for so long. Magic's got that a little bit, but it's not as bad as Schizoid.
What do you mean attached to them for so long?
Well, the session is two person exactly. There's no four person like Magic, no two headed, and you're going to play until you're tired of playing, and then you're going to quit. With Magic, you play for hopefully 10 or 15 minutes, and then you play again. So there's more people filtering in.
Right.
Well, I'm gonna throw this out there, and I don't, it's entirely up to you, Would you like to give out your Xbox gamer tag so people listening to the podcast can play Magic?
Sure.
With you?
All six of you. I'm angry mouse, and that's all lowercase and no spaces.
I'm Clark Hammer, but to be honest, I never log on. So,
and I
can't. I have to set my default account for the Xbox has to be a non Xbox Live account. Otherwise, my son will randomly start purchasing things.
Yeah, I should also say that I'm not sure that I know how to accept friends.
But what about in the Xbox?
Yeah. So if you do call for me and I don't answer, it's not because I don't love you. It's because I'm retarded.
So from all of us here at Games with Garfield, including Richard Garfield's magical colon, I'm Tyler Bielman, along with Scaff Elias.
Goodbye.
And Richard Garfield.
So long.
And we'll catch you next time. Oh, 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 oh.